everything's going. I can begin. Today is January 14th, 2019. And once again, I'm privileged to say hello to those in front of me and those listening across the wide expanse of Torah civilization. In relation to the past, a number of comments that I want to make. I can tie it into the shir. So we're seeing Reb Lazer Silva post-World War II. We're seeing the Igoros Rabbanim. And we're seeing Reb Lazer Silva caught between two worlds. As I quote him in my work on Silva Yira, my work on him, then nothing says it better. Agudat Yisrael is my older sister, but Mizrahi is my younger sister. And this was an approach that gradually became very unacceptable post-World War II. It's a gradual process. During his lifetime, he still remains with a foot in each camp, but afterwards, you'll take Reb Heschel Schechter, who I grew up with and I know so well, and he's an Adam Gadol, one of the greatest in America today, Talmud Chacham, front rank, has a chush in Psak Halacha, and I need not tell you, the OU stands on his shoulders. And Reb Heschel, at a certain point, that's be about 20 years ago, approximately. So he came to an Aguda convention. In other words, I remember his wife's father was Rosh Yeshiva, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Vadas. He's not their right-wing roots there in addition to YU roots. And he came to the Agudat Yisrael, and some of the people tried to signal him to come up front. They knew who he was. And Rabbi Yitzray made it clear that if Reb Heschel comes up front, he's walking out. And this sort of gives you an indication where we're at in the present century as compared to pre-World War II. Now, I mentioned something, I don't know whether it was this class or the other class, about Rabbi Mendel, who's one of the great experts on meat and whole kashrut, shchiter, etc., works for the OU. And I mentioned that he knew the Rav very well. When he caught something from the Rav, it's absolutely accurate. And I mentioned that he grew up in Boston, Brookline. And Nachum Lamb corrected me and said he grew up in Kew Gardens Hills. Later, when he was at Harvard, then he got to know the Rav. So I have to say, I just have an email that I haven't even looked at in depth, because when Sherry got in late yesterday, I left here close to 12. She wasn't in yet. But I see an email from Sidney Gottesman. There must be an understanding. Rabbi Mendel grew up in Boston. Please see the attached article. Rabbi Mendel grew up in Boston. Subsequently, he lived in Kew Gardens Hills. How do I know? Because Rabbi Mendel married my aunt. That is me holding the pole off the chuppah. And Sidney Gottesman, you're a little younger, but I do recognize the Gottesman face. So I have to say, I was too quick to apologize and take Nachum Lamb's correction. And Nachum Lamb, I trust you're listening. You better be careful, or the lamb is going to turn into a sheep. So I think Sidney Gottesman has it right, because I see the picture with the Rav being Masada Kedushin at his wedding, you see? And if he only got to know the Rav afterwards, my high. Okay, that's one correction. The rest will fit right in. So we spoke about indicative of Reb Lazer Silva, the whole issue of Heichal Shlomo. Heichal Shlomo is, today it's hard to believe, you know, what happened to Heichal Shlomo. It's like, to me, when I walk by, when I look in, all right, Herzog College is there, but it's like a Churban Bayit. When I came in Aliyah 50 years ago, Heichal Shlomo was second only to the Kotel. Before the Six-Day War, it was number one. Then it became number two. But the Chief Rabbinate and the Beit Din HaGadol and the semicircle, and all that came to an end. But this was a tremendous machloket. And here you see that the element in America already was furious with Rabbi Maimon Fishman Dom Mizrahi, Hatsofer. I didn't go into all detail. This can actually turn into a nice master's thesis. Ach, and that they dared to criticize Reb Velvel, who was the Gadol Hador, number one, when once the Chazon Ish died, everything centered on Reb Velvel in that world. And here's Reb Lazer Silva. Later, when he's in Israel, he goes to visit Mount Maimon. So my Talmud, Yaakov Sasson, sent me material that it's not just the Baron Kotler, that the Agudas HaRabbanim were furious and declared all the people, including Rabbi Maimon, to be in Nidui. I remember this well. And the Agudas HaRabbanim sent a telegram to all the... it's amazing what comes out of the internet. I can't get over it. Sent the telegram to Israel, to Hatzofer, with copies supposed to go to Hamodia, to Maariv. These are the leading newspapers, and which they declared that anyone who criticized and mocked the Reb Velvel Soloveitchik is in Nidui, giving all the sources. And Reb Lazer Silva is one of the people who signed. Rabbi Eliezer Silva, Rabbi Pinchas Teitz, Rabbi David Lifshitz, members of the Presidium, Rabbi Meir Cohn Menachel. You know who Rabbi Meir Cohn was? That was J. Simcha Cohn's father. If you recognize the name, he was Rav in Los Angeles, then he was in Australia, then he was in Florida. He died, he didn't go out of his 70s. He died a number of years ago. He probably was, it's my age, essentially. He was a Chaim Berlinbo. I knew him quite well. A very wonderful rabbi, good person, and his wife, she's the one who cried to me, Shoshana. She said, Zurav claims that the Mir Yeshiva got more money in Shanghai than anybody else. She says, I was slept under my parents' bed in Shanghai in a crate or something. And they're complaining, this is the way we lived in Shanghai. So it was interesting, but the telegram, American cable and radio system. I mean, it's a world gone by. But then again, it's exactly what I'm saying. Here is Reb Lazer Silva, and here is the Agudas HaRabbanim, the Presidium, and here the same Reb Lazer Silva signing the Nidui, and then going to visit Rav Maimon Fishman. And he was caught between two worlds. I can tell you many of us were caught between two worlds. I remember that controversy well, and I can tell you off the record, I was then in college, and I was very close. I had the privilege of studying with all the Soloveitchik children, the males, and to know the women as well. So Rav Shmuel was my chemistry professor. So I remember we asked Rav Shmuel after class, so what do you think of your uncle? And he said, well, my uncle was always a little bit eccentric, a little bit off the beaten path. You know, that's the way, I don't remember his exact words, but more or less that was it. And of course he said it to two students. We repeated it. Something the Mossad taught me, he said, if you tell one secret to one person, you've told it to 1,000. That 1,000 then tell it on, it can reach 100,000, all because you told one person. And it's absolutely true. So by the next morning, all over New York, they were putting up Karamim against the Rav that he poked fun at his uncle. You follow? Once they heard the name Soloveitchik, they don't know who Shmuel is. They figured it's Soloveitchik. The one has to be is Rabbi Yosef Dov. You don't know Ohanan. The Rav had an issue with denial. And we were embarrassed, for Reb Shmuel. But there's a lot of truth to this, and we were caught between two worlds. But that's Reb Lazer. Now, then another issue that came up when we ended off the class, we were talking about the Howie, you're in... This class goes back 7-8 years. It's the history of Torah in the United States. We're now dealing, we're finishing up the Agudas HaRabbanim, dealing with post-World War II. And generally, there are more students here, but we have a sick list and a fire in the building, and it's unbelievable how it's cut in. But don't feel alone. There are many, many listening. I can show you how many emails were waiting for me from yesterday. But coming back here, so the conservative ketubah. So I have to say, I'll deal with this in much more detail when I deal with the RCA, because this is only a side issue with the Agudas HaRabbanim, and becomes a very focal, basic issue with the RCA, leading into the joint base, and then this really shook the RCA, the synagogue council. It all ties together, and it shook the RCA, and still, to a certain degree, is a red letter, a basic issue, RCA and Rabbinical Alliance trying to resuscitate it today. But Sidney Gottesman, again, I made a mistake. I made an error of a pashyut. See, when I'm looking at what I researched, I'm right on. When I'm speaking off the cuff, at times to make an error of a pashyut, that when the Rabbinical Assembly came up with this addition to the ketuvah, so they made clear you have to go to the Beis Din of Jewish Theological Seminary. So this opened the Pandora's box. Suddenly they're trying to put their Beis Din on the map. Who are they? What are they? What do they know? What's the commitment to Halacha? These are people who are matir stam yenim. These are people who are matir electricity on Shabbos. These are people who are matir driving to shul. Again, the Rabbinical Assembly, their Beis Din, their committee on it was called their Committee on Jewish Law. It had I explained this many times over the decades. They had a unique position, not the way we live. We live with the concept acharei rabim lahatot, and you all know once the same thing. I've given many lectures on hitgapshut hilchatit. Again, I'm forgetting my English, but the crystallization of halacha. Maybe you have a better word for hitgapshut. The Rambam in his Hakdama to Mishneh Torah, the Rambam says this clearly. Yes, the question: why do we have to follow the Gemara? How he comes from Hollywood, Florida. There are people in Hollywood, Florida, who say they like Beit Shammai, not Beit Hillel. You follow? They like Abaya, not Rava. How? Why do we have to follow the Psak of the Gemara? So the Rambam says, and it's basic to understanding Torah Shebaal Peh, if you don't understand the Rambam, then you become like David Hartman or Yitz Greenberg or like Cardoza today, Lopez Cardoza, Nathan Lopez Cardoza. You can change the halacha, but the Rambam says, yes, there's always machloket, but ultimately you hit a decision, a hit kapshut, and once you hit a decision, in relation to the Gemara, kiblu aleim kol Yisrael. Okay, beyond the Gemara, let's say a Rishonim already. Yeah, we reached a decision, but still a minority opinion. You can use this as sniff. When you, for instance, I mentioned this. I think yesterday we got involved with this when I was dealing with the Sefer I reviewed, the new Sefer that came out of the Rav of Bijana. Before the Masham, before Rav Shvadron was the Rav, so it was someone sitting in front of me, his great-great-grandfather, and they just published the Sefer, and I went through it. But, for instance, I had a terrible problem. I write about it in Washington. You'll find it all in Yabia Omer of Rav Avadja Yosef, Volume 9. I had a terrible problem. This woman came in Aliyah from Russia, and she married a man here, quite a bit older, was not religious, and the man died. The man died. They never had any children together. He had no children at all. I don't even know if he was married before. I never met him. And now she needs chlitza. She became frum. She's gone with a frum man, and the man knew that she needs chlitza, also a Russian. And how does she get chlitza? The brother said of a kolchoz in Russia, Soviet Russia, is when the Iron Curtain was still standing, not firmly, it was starting to shake, but still there was an Iron Curtain. We're talking the late 80s. So we couldn't get her into Russia. They want to get married. And I came up in class. I was learning the Inyan of Sveik Sveika right here in the Kollel. And it suddenly dawned upon me, I can put together a Sveik Sveika. What's the Sveik Sveika? Very simple. On one hand, there's a sheet brought down from the Goyinim, It's dismissed by most of the Rishonim. We don't paskin that way. But there is a shita that if the brother-in-law is not observant, is the Amuma, doesn't believe, there's no need, he's not a Jew, he's not considered a Jew. It's a Gemara in Yevamot, Daf Yud Zayin. Lo zazu misham, until they declare the ten shvatim agoyim, they're not Jews anymore. No, the brother's head of a kolchais, so he has no belief, he's a communist. Alright, we don't paskin that way, but it's a sniff. You follow? The other sniff was a lot more simple. The man she married had a kidney condition. She didn't know how serious it was. He was quite a bit older, and he had a difficult illness in his body, which he wasn't aware and she wasn't aware. It's not that he fooled her. But then, within the year, it became, tangible. It became real. And he dies from it. Well, had she known, she would have never married him. It goes into the category of Mekach Ta'ut. So you have Reb Moshe's Tshuva, others. So you put together a Sveik Sveika. So this is what I mean, it remains a sniff. I then, this was an interesting story to end it off. I took a lawyer, a very famous lawyer, Professor Dov Frimmer. Probably you've heard the name Dov Frimmer. Why you graduate? Son of Rabbi Dr. Norman Frimmer, if that name means anything to you. And Dov is a top quality lawyer and charges a fortune, but he had to do it for nothing for me, pro bono. Why did he have to do it for nothing? Because I sent him to Russia. So he paid me back. He had, you and your brother went to Russia, and he took the case, I have to say, to his credit, pro bono, and he went into the Batei Dinim, and he presents my thinking. And all the Dayanim say, Harav Rakefet is, I don't want to use their words, but he knows what he's talking about, makes sense. But we don't, we have nish to break the places. We don't have a gav, lo kol kach hazak, lahatir davar kaseh, tzachim olechet l'Rav Avadja. Now, to get into Rav Avadja in the late 80s was mission impossible because the whole world wanted to get in. But once again, the Eibishter helped me. I taught his daughter, Rivka's my Talmida. And he was worried stiff what will happen to Michlala. And he sees what she's hearing, declare, I have Harkadashat from Rav Avadja, would send me reprints, the early 70s.
Is this the one that's not running?
No. This is the one whose husband is the Rosh Yeshiva, the Hesdi Yeshiva in Modiin. He's the Sfadik Rav of Modiin, I believe. But he said, Rosh Yeshiva, she married, I mean, it's a real, she married a graduate of Chesda from Hakotel. So it tells you where she went. No, the one running is, she was already called by the Charedim, the reformed daughter of Rav Avadja. Oh boy, a hotnish kainacha. So yeah, I knew him. So the minute Rav Avadja heard I wanted to see him, so we make an appointment, and when we walk in, the Gabbai yells, Hashkenazim Higiyu, all the Svadim, I'm glickendred, they're waiting, and we went right in. But Rav Avadja, I spoke with him, it was just a pleasure. We had spoken before, but this time, he looked at me with those eyes, I need to face up. And then he says, I couldn't believe my ears, he says to Dov, in a week to 10 days, I will give you a written tshuva with all the sources for what Rav Rakefet is saying. He hit the nail on the head. 10 days later, Dov gets a call, sends his secretary. He picks up a 20-page legal, long pages, typed out with every source in the world. What that man knew, what that man knew. And Matir. Anyway, by now it's 1989. The Iron Curtain is starting to fall. So now she can go in. So we raised $1,000 for her. And not only did he give a chalitza, he pleaded with her to invite, you still needed an invitation. It's a year or two later that everyone comes out. Pleaded with her for an invitation to Israel, the head of the Kohos. So Rav Avadja writes at the end that this is lahalacha, but thank God it didn't have to be lamasa. I have to tell you, because it was so revolutionary, he put it tonight, and I had to get two more Gedolei Yisrael to to agree with him. I got two more tshuvot. I put that, why you graduate is no longer alive, but I put him to work. I said, look, you're not working. I'm teaching around the clock yet in those years. I don't have a minute free. I'm going to set you out. I'll make the initial contacts. I made a contact with Rav Mashash, the Sfadik chief rabbi of Jerusalem, and Rav Shol Yisraeli. And we got two long tshuvot. I went to Rav Waldenberg as well. So he said to me, he went through, he said, you follow? I said, all right, that's also an achievement, you know, that I had Rav Waldenberg, at least he's not going to. Okay, so that's what we mean, that a sniff. And halacha has to be solid and firm. Now, with the ketubah, it is true, I said last week, and I'll restate it, that this conservative ketubah morphed into the RCA prenuptial agreement. We'll talk about it a little more in detail with the RCA. There's no doubt in my mind, and Rabbi Sidney Gottesman, who's a fine Talmud Chacham, lives in Teaneck. His father was my wife's classmate in Ramaz. He has a wonderful son living here who did Army, a Machon Lev graduate, so I have to be very machshiv the family. And you hear the name Gottesman, you know who we're talking about, and this is her family. This branch remained good Jews. I believe they're Kohanim 100%. There's a lot of, yes, they're Kohanim. A lot of their Kohanim from that family can't give Birchat HaKohanim today, and they can give B'lev V'Nefesh. So I remembered in class, I said to you, there was an article by Rabbi Rachman again. No, it's not Rabbi Rachman, it's Rabbi Lamb. And I thank Sidney for sending me a copy of the article. And then when I started to think, I understood already my mistake. I confused, you know, Rabbi Lamb then was a youngster. Rabbi Rachman was very famous. But then I remembered there was a legal dissertation, and I noticed he writes to me. I didn't pick this up. I thought, I wrote back to him, tell me, wasn't there an article by A. Leo Levin and Meir Kramer, to make believe you recognize the names of the ignorant pass for the wise. A. Leo Levin, these are graduates of Yeshiva University, reads A. Leo Levin, world famous professor in law. Meir Kramer was a rabbi in Philadelphia. He became a professor of law at the U of P. These were two giants, and they wrote an article against the legal aspects, feeling that it won't hold up in secular court. All right, there's a lot to be said, and if anyone has access to that article, please send it to me. I'd like to look at it, look at Rabbi Lamb's article, but we'll leave that when we deal with the RCA. We'll come back to it. But there's no question that the Agudas HaRabbanim, it was waving a red flag in front of a bull to go to the JTS based in. And remember what I told you last week, that the gittin that the Beit Din issued by Boaz Cohn were accepted by every Beit Din in the world. I think even the Eidah Charei did accept it. And Boaz Cohn, and this was true about the seminary, they had people on the faculty that were Gedolei Torah, some of them, and Tzaddikim. You don't need a better example than Professor Shaul Lieberman. And I just saw in a new book that's coming out, they interviewed Professor Halivni Weiss. Again, a very famous name. Halivni Weiss, I know him. I taught his son was in the Kollel, son got smicha from YU. Halivni Weiss, you're talking about a Jew who knew Kol HaTorah Kulo by heart. Talking about a Jew who went through the hell of the Holocaust. I think in his he has a memoir, it's worth reading. I think he had one page that he of Ebenezer, if I'm not mistaken, that survived with him in the death camps, and that's what he looked at for years. That's the only learning he could do. But everything he knew, he came to America, and he wound up in Chaim Berlin. And Rav Hutner was very good to him. Rav Hutner didn't like the way he was dressed. The first suit that he ever wore after the Holocaust, Rav Hutner bought for him. So you have to understand who Rav Hutner was. Later, he went to the seminary and he taught there, and he became very close to Rav Shaul Lieberman. So the person interviewing him, and you can't suspect him of being pro-JTS, because person interviewing him for this book was a Chabadnik through and through and through, not a Baal Tshuva, but a Gabarna, a Musmach, a Rav, I mean, someone who knew the inner workings of Chabad inside out. And he's interviewing, he says, who was bigger, Rav Hutner or Professor Liebman? He says, there's no comparison. Professor Liebman was bigger. So I told you, this is the impression I got from Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, and Rabbi Aaron, I don't have to tell you, there was no one bigger than Rabbi Aaron, not in America, not in the state of Israel. He knew Tala Karakula, it was Munach Bekuf Sabar, and he, when he would speak of Rabbi Shaul Liebman, he would sit there, he would shake, you understand? So, the seminary did have people like that. You had Boaz Cohen, you had before that Rabbi Chaimson. These are well-known people. Rabbi Drachman taught there. We'll come to Rabbi Drachman, if not today, next week for sure. And the Beit Din perhaps was a from Beit Din. It could be they put people on, but they give it the Gushpanker of JTS, as if they know what Torah is, people who are matir driving to shul, and they're going to be the ultimate arbiters. So the Akudas Rabbanim yelled and shouted, the RCA, and ultimately it did not get off the floor. But it certainly remained an issue, it remains an issue until today, and all of us suffer from the fact that men will use the power they have over women to extort them for money. And everyone will say, if this is Torah, I don't want any part of it. And I've heard that with my own ears. I've heard it from people. And it's a very sad situation. And the Rav, you know, commented already in his time. I heard this with my own ears. The Rav said, Torah is perfect. Torah Hashem Tamima. It's a beautiful system. But people destroy it. In other words, it's a beautiful system. A man runs after the woman. You have to propose. You have to get down on your knees. You have to treat a woman properly. Look at the Rambam. Look at Hilchot Ishit, Perek Tetvav. It's a beautiful system. But we destroy it. And all of us are caught up in it with these men. And I told you, I've been involved myself trying to solve cases, etc. It's very sad. But that's the reality. But now let me go further. And let me come to the high point of today's Shia. And if you ever want an indication of what was happening in America, all you have to do is go back to 1962, December, Bet Kislev, or at the end of November, wherever it fell that year, the death of Rabbi Aaron Cutler. Now, Rabbi Aaron Cutler's impact in America, and we'll leave this for future generations to decide, I certainly can not give a definitive answer because I'm subjective. I lived it. I knew Rabbi Aaron, I knew the Rav. I went to Fabringen's at the Chabad. Who had a greater influence? You can debate it from today to tomorrow. There's no question, when you look at numbers, the greatest influence was the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe will not give up on any Jew. What he left behind, this whole concept of outreach, of putting on tefillin, of giving out candlelight candles, and it's an unbelievable success story. With all due respects to Reb Noach Bornstein and Reb Yeruchim Gerelik, my Rebbeim, it's an unbelievable success story. But then you take the Rav. The Rav had a tremendous influence. The numbers are much smaller. To be influenced by the Rav, you have to be a Talmud Chacham, you have to know how to learn, you have to have a certain broad vision. But there's no question that what they call YU type orthodoxy, or Western orthodoxy, as Rakefit refers to it, or modern orthodoxy, as people want to refer to it, but if you call me modern orthodox, I'll smack your face, do other things, and charge you first soda, if you remember, for 2 cents plain by Harry Golden. Anyone remember? Or am I Baruch Hashem? Mm-hmm. So, modern, you know, I don't like it. Modern means there's something the matter. That Torah is beautiful. It was beautiful 1,000 years ago and 2,000 years ago. Nothing modern about it. I don't want any modernity. Lehefet, when I look at the modern world, I have tremendous problems with it. Western orthodoxy. I want to be a Torah Jew in Western context. But all right. Certainly the Rav gave us a backbone, the Rav gave us legitimacy, and it's the Rav today has more influence in Israel than he had in the United States. And as I said more than once, when people kiss me when I say it, they think about it, wow, you're so... I say in Israel, willy-nilly, the greatest charedim have to become Western people. Why? Because the Haredim are taking over the country. If you see the news this morning, Haredim are boasting. They gave a list of cities that in 10 years, sections in Yerushalayim will be Haredi. And they list out the Kiryat Yovel, Beit HaKerem, other cities. It's true. It's true. The increase of birth. But you become the majority. You have to run the hospitals. You have to run the army. You have to fly the airplanes. You got to get involved with the modern world. Willy-nilly, it all becomes part of Binyan Haaretz. It all becomes the mitzvah. And we're seeing it happen before our eyes. Today, it's thousands. Within 10 years, it's going to be tens of thousands. And within 50 years, it'll be hundreds of thousands, if not millions. So, and the Rav, is, you see, there's a reawakening of interest in the Rav that goes way beyond the narrow yeshiva university world. So that was his influence. Reb Aaron Cutler, what that man accomplished, it's against all odds. He is an individual who came in and insisted, we pay no attention to America, no attention to the Western world, we only have to learn, and what the Chazon Ish and the Brisker Rav, more the Chazon Ish than the Brisker Rav, because Chazon Ish was more involved with the basic Israeli society. The Brisker Rav was more in a corner in Yerushalayim in Geula, but the Chazon Ish, B'nai Brak, Poli Agudat Yisrael, everything that went on, the Panovitch Yeshiva, what they accomplished, we just got to sit and learn. Hitler killed 6 million. Hitler obliterated all the great yeshivot. If we don't sit and learn, Torah will be forgotten. And they did that in Israel. They did that in America. Take a look what Lakewood accomplished. Take a look, Chaim Berlin, Mr. Mendelovich. You can't deny it. They're facts on the ground, documents. They wanted to open a college in Brooklyn for the yeshiva boys to rival Yeshiva College and to do it their way, not under one roof. I just spoke with Jomo this morning. Are we proud of Yeshiva College? Are we not proud? It's a very interesting... Jomo used a new Hebrew word he learned. Zemurkav biyoter. He's absolutely right. You go to Yeshiva College. I was on the campus last year for a number of weeks. You go into the Gluck Beit Medrash, hundreds and hundreds are learning. Go into the old Beit Medrash, Tari Fishel, you put together over 1,000 kids are learning around the clock, morning, afternoon, night, early afternoon, night. And on the other hand, you have kids walking around without kippot. So the idea that they had in Brooklyn was to build a college totally separate from the yeshivat, but it would be under the jurisdiction of Torah Mesorah, perhaps, or something like it, Mr. Mendelovich, Rabbi Huttner, others, and the kids would be able to go to college. They don't have to go to YU, they don't have to go to Brooklyn College, they don't have to go to Columbia, and everything will be courses without upper courses. And Reb Aaron Cutler nixed it, and if he nixed it, he nixed it. And he's the one built Lakewood, which becomes a prototype. Today in Chaim Berlin, I don't know how many boys are going to college. Today in Torah V'das, I don't know with Yitzi Lichtenstein, Rabbi Lichtenstein taking over, maybe it'll broaden. I don't know how many boys are going to college today. Certainly in Lakewood, no one goes to college, if you're in Lakewood per se. But much more than that, he built Agudat Yisrael. Before World War II, as I told you, there wasn't one rabbi of any stature in the United States who was an agudist. The only agudist was in Omaha, Nebraska, Reb Tzvi Hirsch Grudzinski, a cousin to Reb Chaim Moshe, a gon adir, a photographic memory. He had as much influence on the American scene as a cow that was just shech. Do you follow? Tate the Behemoth, no, what influence? Everyone was Mizrahiite. Today in America, Agudat Yisrael, major institution. All right, it's a whole history. Agudat Yisrael, Reb Moshe Scherer, how it came about, the Mitzvot Gedolei HaTorah. They have problems today. I don't deny they brought the Machloket from Israel to America. You're all witnesses to this. This is recent. It happened a few weeks ago. It's not ancient history. It's a crime, it's a shame to bring the Narishkeit from here to there, but you have people who are convinced, Hasidim Rabbi Karsim, Litvakim Rabbi Karsim. There are very few people who say, I have my point of view, but the many other Hashkafic points of view. I have a terrible problem with those who don't understand that, because how do you learn Gemara? Every daf of Gemara, there's machloikas, it comes to Hashkafa, we never reach a conclusion. They open up a medrash, there are 10 different opinions. But Baruch Hashem, we live with all of them. You can have your own viewpoint, but it doesn't mean you have to be negative towards others. All right. But Rav Aaron Cutler, what that man achieved. All right. Numbers, certainly not Lubavitch, but I believe Rav Aaron influenced more than the Rav. More than the Rav. Because to be a Talmud of the Rav, you have to have intellect. You have to be deep into learning. You have to appreciate him. Rav Aaron already was a new way of life. Ultimately, everyone is wearing a black dress, a black coat, a black suit, a black hat. It becomes semi-Hasidic to a certain degree. And by the way, that's probably the tragedy of Dr. Friedman, of Richie Friedman. For my heart breaks again, it's someone you don't know, but this is someone real. You should know the name Shabbos Friedman. His grandfather was the Frum doctor on the Upper West Side. When I was growing up, everyone spoke about Shabbos Friedman. He had a goy who stayed with him on Shabbos. For any emergency, the goy would carry his bag. Whoever heard of an Erev in New York at that time, the goy would carry his bag. If he had to be driven, the goy drove from Shabbos. It's an amazing thing. His son and the grandson, Richie, who's the age of my Talmidim, and Richie discovered his roots. He went back to Bava, he comes from Bava Chassidim, and he was a first-class doctor who on Shabbos, with a Bekeshil with the works. And what happened, I was told by a student, the Israeli press reported a doctor was killed going home from Shul on Shabbos in Lawrence. It was Motzoi Shabbos, and he was... But this is the worst part of the story. He was killed by a frum Jew who was driving home from shul. And because he was wearing black, he didn't see him. It's a suburb. Lawrence is a suburb. Even a Broadway. I keep telling them Broadway Street. That's Central Avenue, Broadway. And you don't see someone in black. Even in Yerushalayim, you have to be careful. There should be a law that at night you have to wear something yellow that reflects. But this was America. He became, and that's my, I told you my story with him. It's an unbelievable story where I was giving a shiur in Lido Beach. If I told you the story, stop me. I was giving a shiur in Lido Beach, and Dr. Friedman Ritchie is sitting in the front row, and he starts crying. I'm giving a shiur. I'm not giving Musa. I'm not talking Torah history. I'm giving a shiur, Shas, Paiskim, whatever. So I asked him after the shiur, he says, oh, I have to apologize to you. And the story is very simple. In 1990, my student got married in Chicago. So he brought me in from Israel, the Sadeh Kedushin. He was marrying a girl from a Satma family. At the wedding, a well-to-do family, so at the wedding there were many Rashi Yeshiva and many Satma Shluchim. And the girl's mother was very upset that he's bringing in a rabbi, beardless. Whoa, my gosh, what he looks like. So I have to thank Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. He called the mother of the Kal. I'm revealing, it's time to reveal what I've never revealed before. He called the mother of the Kal to tell her who the Masada Kedushin was. And she accepted. Rav Aaron told her whatever he told, I don't want to repeat. But she, this is a lady who came over to me afterwards and said, Allah betten for me geld. All the Rosh Yeshiva, the Rabbi, everyone's asking me for money. And she said, do bets, he's like the Masada Kedushin, and you're not asking for anything. I said, look, I teach for YU, they pay my salary, I don't have to raise money. She said, no, I want to give. I said, all right, shvutami. She wrote out a check, I think it was $5,000 for shvutami on the spot. So I was Masada Kedushin. Now, in the Olam was Richie, who then was an intern at one of the big hospitals in Chicago. He came home for Pesach, and this wedding was March. Pesach, he's home at the Seder, and he tells his parents, I want to tell you something very funny happened. there was this wedding from this family, and ala rabbonim, and ala gaboyim, and from the Satmu Ruv, and ala Rashi Yeshiva, and the Masonic Kedushin was a Reform rabbi from Jerusalem. His parents didn't know who it was, but they put it together when I gave the shiur, and he started crying and apologized. He realized, this is the Reform rabbi from Jerusalem. So I cry, Richie, he had, I think it's 8 children involved, and to die in that fashion, and imagine how the person who killed them feels. See, gullus was a good thing. It gave you a chance to feel you're expiating what happened. It's like a kapara. But today you don't go into gullus. To live with that, God should give strength. Mendafkein vaita, but we have to remember Richie fondly, Seichet Tzadik Levracha. But Reb Aaron changed America. In that respect, he reached out to an entire Litvish and non-Hasidic world and turned them in Torah only, in the full sense of the word. And even in the German stronghold in Washington Heights, you know very well what has happened in recent years with the debate. How did we Germans become followers of Lakewood and leaving behind our heritage of Rav Shimshon of Falk Hirsch? Okay. Now, when Reb Aaron died, it was a shock to everyone. He was only 70. He was born in 1892. He died 1962. And everyone was übergerascht, overwhelmed. And now, he died on a Thursday. I remember every detail. You're looking at me. It's not that I have a photographic memory, but I lived it. I lived it. I can still remember the knock on my door. I'm giving shir in Yeshiva Shabbos Kol Hanan, and they knock on my door to tell me Reb Aaron Cutler just died. And I remember Reb Mendel Sachs and the hallway and everyone. So the Rosh Yeshiva got together and they're going to sarapon him, and they decided not to do the funeral right away, that if Reb Aaron died, you have to do a Bekovedik funeral. This is like a melech died. And they decided to do the funeral on Sunday. All right, then the question was where to do the funeral. So they took over, it was called the Cavalera Synagogue on the east side, had a very large synagogue base where they could sit hundreds and hundreds, if not more than 1,000 people. And the crowd that came to the funeral was indescribable. It was, the police said at least 25,000, maybe more. It was unheard of. This was a shocking thing. This, the United States, 1962. 25,000 people. There wasn't, the New York Times wrote up that there wasn't such a large funeral since the funeral of Rabbi Jacob Joseph in 1902. Remember the funeral there? The Jews came out with a guilt conscience for the way they treated him, and the funeral turned into riots. It was a terrible story, a terrible R.H. Hohen company with throwing down the nails, the bolts they manufactured. The Irish, the Italians saw Jews, the anti-Semitism, a very, very, very sad story. But this was Reb Aaron's funeral. On Sunday, who took over everything? Reb Aaron's Talmidim. And they decided who should be let into the synagogue. They saw the crowd, and they put people at the door, only B'nai Terah. Everyone else can stand outside in the cold. Remember it? Remember?
I don't remember. My father was a
tzaddik. Was there? So I'm telling it as it was. There's nothing that I'm adding and nothing that I'm subtracting. This was the situation. Worse than that. Two gedolim. Gedolei gedolim. Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin was not asked to speak. Was snubbed. This is Rabbi Henkin. This is someone who grew up in Slutz before the yeshiva moved to Kletz. Someone who was older than Reb Aaron, who was a Gaon Adir at Tzadik Yisod Olam. This is Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Eidat Yisrael, not asked to speak. No, his children went to college. He was not anti-YU. He's the one that, when Reb Aaron visited America to raise funds for Kletz and didn't want to give a shir in Reitz, Rav Henkin told him, "This is nishtandris v'yandere yeshiva. It's no different than any other yeshiva. The only difference is to have a college. the other yeshiva, they have to travel to college, and here it's in the same building. But he said, I'm giving you the exact words. I heard this word by word from Rav Palayev, who was also a slutska. He was also part of this Chabura, and he was standing there with Rav Henkin. They went to see Rav Aaron. And Rav Aaron was much younger. Rav Palayev was older. Rav Henkin was older. Derech Eretz, the Gedolei Yisrael, who were older. So Rav Aaron went and gave his share. But his own kids, you understand, they went to college. No, Rav Henkin can't speak. More than that, the person who had a very unique, deep relationship with Rav Aaron and did so much for Chinuch Atzmai, the Rav. They didn't even ask the Rav to sit Eibunun up front. They were nice enough to let him into the shul, but sit down with the masses was not asked to speak. The Rav. All right. This was the funeral. This was Rav Aaron. I think you can understand that this tells you what has happened in America. 1962, case study. Call it in popular language the right wing. They're powerful. They're here to stay. They've taken roots. It's not a fly by night. You're going from 56, the Chayrim against Synagogue Council Board of Rabbis, you're going to the funeral. And once again, very interesting, you go to Hapades, and now Rabbi Elberg, Rabbi Simcha Elberg, he remained independent. He remained a unique individual to a certain degree, like Reb Lezer Silva, and he ran a whole editorial translated from Hebrew to English by Rakefet, to desecration of the honor of the rabbinate. That's the headline. Why didn't the yeshiva students consult with the Agudat HaRabbanim concerning the funeral arrangements and the eulogizers? If the rabbinic organization had been involved in these manners, then a gone and saint like Rav Henkin would not have been passed over. Likewise, another great personality in Gone, referring to Rabbi Soloveitchik, would not have been snubbed. They had only consulted with the Agudat Rabbanim, and the doors of the synagogue would not have been closed to many important Rabbanim. What kind of yeshiva student could issue such a disgraceful order to only permit the entry of B'nai Terah, quote, and not Rabbanim? Is the honor due to the Rav less than that which the yeshiva student deserves? Hundreds of Rabbanim, among them Ga'onim and giants of Torah, had to stand outside for hours. They were not allowed inside the synagogue, although there was room for another few hundred. If Rav Aaron had been alive, he would have been upset and agitated by the desecration of the rabbinate. The arrangements for the funeral of this great man should not have been left in the hands of a few yeshiva youngsters. It should rather have been left to the leading rabbanim with whom Rav Aaron jointly worked for the strengthening of Torah and Judaism. And this is exactly what has happened. Rabbanim do not count. It is Rashi Yeshiva. They are now the arbiters, they are the decisors, they are the poskei hadar, they have the last word. America has greatly shifted gears. Yes, yes.
Not even that, it's a shamashim.
No, that's a different story. The influence of the shamashim, that's in Israel. They claim today that Rav Kanievsky's grandson is running the whole show of the Haredi world. But all right, listen, that's life. That's life. The shamashim. It's inevitable because the Rabbanim, you take the Rav, later in years, he was totally dependent upon the Talmidim who surrounded him. And and he knew, you see, David Holza, you take David Holza, my dear friend, colleague, Talmud Chaver, his wife, my Talmidah. So David wrote the book, you know, the Rav, what's it, Thinks Aloud. The Lichtenstein family was not happy with the book. I can tell you, it's the only time I prepared a talk. I have the notes in 2 minutes, a minute from here in the office. And I never gave the talk because it was an overlooking critique of his book where he's right, where I think he's wrong, an interesting talk. But I knew the Lichtensteins would be upset if I gave a talk on the book, so I didn't give it. But David told me, he asked the Rav if he can shave during Sphira. All right? And here he's asking the Rav, who I can bring you yet, Baruch Hashem, there must be a few thousand people alive who sat in the classroom, and we can all testify that the Rav shaved during Sphira. All right? I don't know, in your time, when did you study with the Rav?
I did it to Rav Malicious.
You studied with Rav Dovid, you didn't study with the Rav. But, you know, from 67 on, he had a full beard. It's an Avelis beard. It was a beard that I wasn't happy with. You know, when Rav Neria was appointed Rosh Yeshiva of Kfar HaRoeh, so in Bnei Akiva, they decided the Rosh Yeshiva has to have a beard. So he had a beard. It was an Avelet beard. So he said, no. When the Avelet ends, I take off this beard. To be Rosh Yeshiva, you have to grow a beard of simcha, of joy. And took off the beard. And then he grew a beard, also Rosh Yeshiva. But the Rav, and it's the Sphira beard, it's the Avelet beard of his wife, obviously he never got over it. We can understand it. So that beard I'm not that happy with. But we know very well in the 50s into the 60s, the 40s, I wasn't there in the 40s, but 50s, 60s, the Rav shaved. So he looks at David and he says, you shouldn't shave. You follow? Underline the word you. So the Rav, then there's the other story also, it's classic with the Rav, the Gaboyim, most of the Gaboyim were my own students. So I was told the story, it must be about 79, the Rav was suddenly in his apartment in Morgenstern, he says to the Gaboyim, you know, the Rav had ulcers, he had to drink a lot of milk, says to the Gaboyim, get me a quart of milk. And the Gaboyim behind his back, you know, they're whispering, what does he mean? Which milk? What milk? Chalav Yisrael, you know. And the Rav hears them whispering, and the Rav says, I want a quart of Delwood milk. And he says, here, whatever it was, he gave them a quarter, whatever it cost, I don't know, a half dollar, whatever, at that time, Delwood milk. Now, you understand, Delwood milk is Chalav Yisrael, not Chalav Yisrael, it's Stam Chalav with an O-U-D on it. But you see, the Rav knew where he stood and where the Talmidim stood. And he, that was the famous talk he gave at the Holza house where the Rav speaks about how with Manny and Manny's friend, the Holza family, how he feels very much at home. And then he starts to, you know, the Rabbanim, it's that Queen's crowd. Says, let me tell you, generally I'm not at home with what's going on around me. And he takes off on, he says, today, what are the Rebbeim trying to do? What are the Rosh Yeshiva trying to do? We should all look the same, think the same, dress the same. We have to show everyone I'm no different than anyone else. He says, that's not Torah. Torah, to be great, you have to be different, you have to think different, you have to allow for differences. And he says, this does not produce greatness. It can never produce a Reb Chaim. It can never produce someone like my grandfather. It cannot produce innovativeness. And that was the Rav. But the funeral is a landmark when you want to talk about what's happened in American Orthodoxy or American Torah post-World War II. Let's come back to Reb Lazer Silva. And again, it captured.
I attended the Levayan in Yerushalayim.
You were at the Levayan in Yerushalayim. Who was Maspidim here? You don't remember.
I just remember being there.
Ben. And it was a big... Right. I was at the Life for Rav Moshe in Yerushalayim, and also the crowd was way more than 25,000. But I'm sure even when you were there at the funeral in 62, you had more than 25,000. Because you had the whole... you were studying then in Kol Torah, but you had the whole Geula crowd, the Meir Shearim crowd, Aaron Cutler. I don't know if the Gerich Siddis turned out, but the Gerich Siddis wasn't that large yet. Bells was certainly not large yet. When you were studied here, Ger was larger than Bells, but not what it became afterwards. Rabbi Yisrael, the 70s was the whole breakthrough of Ger, Rabbi Yisrael, Alta, wow. He also an unsung hero today, the average Jew. Yesterday in class, I asked the class if they heard of Joseph Mendelovich, Rabbi Yosef HaTzadik. They didn't hear. They jumped on a kid, graduated Ida Crown. I said, I'm filing a protest with Ida Crown in Chicago that you could come out of it and not know who Yosef HaTzadik Mendelovich. But this was Rabarin, this was the funeral. All right, there's a lot to talk about. What happened afterwards in Lakewood with Reb Schneer. And Reb Schneer already was a different type than Reb Aaron. And I knew Reb Schneer very well. And Morty, you knew him too. He was more open. And there wasn't the antagonism towards Hasidus that Reb Aaron had. Reb Aaron was mamish convinced that Hasidim would be crossing. And if you understand Reb Aaron, you can understand Reb Shach. Rav Shach grew up in Kletsk Slutsk. This is who we're talking about. He was a Slutsk Rosh Yeshiva. He was a Talmud of Rabbi Zalman. Rabbi Zalman made his shidduch, right or wrong. He married Rabbi Zalman's niece. But that antipathy, antagonism towards Chassidus, and we live with it here, the division, it's beyond me. And believe me, I'm not in favor of davening at 10 o'clock Shabbos morning, starting Shachris. But you have to make your peace. The Vilna Gaoner, Rav Heschel Schechter, once said to me that they daven shalom bizman. I said, look, the Vilna Gaoner fought that battle 200 years ago. He lost. Halavai, I understand in Ger, they're much more makpid on zmanei tefillah. You can correct me if I'm wrong. In Belz already it's shvach. And the Belzer Rebbe himself, he comes to be Sandek, in a Siddiq world, the Rebbe has to be Sandek. He can come in with the Brit after sunset. How they do it, I have no idea, but that's Chassidus. They can change the sun, hold up the sun, not let it set yet, etc. How are you? Have you had that experience or down in Hollywood?
One time, pretty close.
Yeah, with Chassidus Shabris? Yeah, all right, so you know what I'm talking about. All right, but then there's another story. And I have to say, I have a Yetzer Hara to go into research and come up with Shevurim against my emotion, but I think I have to be honest. And that, of course, another person who had tremendous influence on the American scene, Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, the Satmar Rav. And you all know the Satmar, the anti-Israel feeling. To a certain degree, Satmar is more than the Eidah Haredit, and it may be, to a certain degree, bedfellows with Natura Kata. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. The Eidah Haredit is anti, but they don't demonstrate in public, and they don't hold meetings with the King of Jordan to come and rule Israel, take over Palestine. The Eidah Haredit, to a certain degree, they've made their peace with Israel. I can tell you my daughter has gotten cases sent to her by the Beitin of the Eidah Haredit. You understand what I'm saying? They cooperate with the Batei Dinim here. And let's say there's a delicate issue of a woman, sexual harassment by her husband, etc. Imagine a man wants to have relations with his wife when she's a Nida. I mean, I can tell you, I don't want to shock anyone. My daughter says I'm very naive, but she tells me stories. You know, to me, a frum Jew is a frum Jew. But you know, you got a case like that. So the Eidah Haredit will refer to my daughter. Let her handle it, and let the Beitin, the regular Beitin, handle it with the social workers. Well, all that goes into it. A case like that, I'm giving him dugma. There are other cases. where the man has, lo aleinu, let me not give details. My daughter always tells one story. I'll lighten up the class. She says she only wishes she had a video. She has this case sent to her by the Eid HaRedit. And this is a frum woman from Geula. And her husband has a paramour wherever he goes. He's in business. He's not a poor man. And he's in France. And, right, what can I tell you? He's going back to have 18 wives minimum, 18 women. So she wants a get. And the Beit Nuris, he has to give a get. No, you got to catch him. He's in business in France. So they get a tzav from the police. You know, the Beit issues a tzav. The police issue it to arrest him. Now you got to find him. So my daughter says, she was about 9 o'clock at night, ready to go to sleep. And she gets a call from the woman whom the Eid HaRedit sent to her. My husband is in Geula. He's with a woman. Don't want to use a bad word. Right now, I give you the address. Gives my daughter the address. She calls the police. Police look it up. Immediately send a police car. Two policemen in the car. My daughter's sitting in back. And the policeman says, the driver says to the other policeman, Maholechka, Mazekan, you know. And the other guy says, Al Tidak, Hayiti Kva Beseret Hazeh. He said, I've been to this movie, I know what's going on. And my daughter says, if only it was 20, she said, my kids would have enjoyed it. They get there, and sure enough, the policemen catch him, mamish. So they haul him off to jail overnight. And they bring him in to the baiting the next morning. And my daughter's there, and she describes the guy. You can see a fancy suit, but he was in jail with nothing. He's not clean-shaven, wherever he, I don't know if he had a little beard, or clean, totally clean-shaven, and disheveled, and he comes in, and he's finished. They say to him, if you don't give a get, you're spending the next year in jail. So he gave a get. As he walks out, he turns to my daughter and bows to her and says to her, Kol HaKavod. So that tells you, if you're going to lose the seventh game of the World Series, you know how to thank the other manager. My daughter said, he showed a trait of decency despite the story. But you see, that's Eid HaRedit. Satma, the Beitin, Eretz Yisrael, a Tolenet, a Afroi would be a Tolenet, a Afroi Ken, Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezra, a Noisvav, an Apikoides, what can they wouldn't. So, but the Satma caused a lot of public harm. And you know, there were demonstrations, there still are demonstrations against Israel, and not all Satma. I have to tell you, it's hard to say what percentage, but today Satma is already a third, fourth, even a fifth generation in the United States. The Satma Chassid you talk with today is not the Satma Chassid of 50, 60 years ago. I can tell you from my own experience. I remember talking with a Satma Chassid, and he says, with broken English, they don't speak English, it's come up again with all that's going on with the high schools not teaching English, you don't speak English, they speak with an accent, and he says, you had a great Rav Soloveitchik, and I had a great Rav Yoelish, and we both have to follow our Rebbeim. It was a very nice statement, Eilu V'Eilu. But the harm done by the demonstrations, and you have to remember, The goyim are looking. The New York Times eats this up. The pictures, the harm, and Rav Lazer Silva came out with a public letter, 1958. A beautiful, beautiful public letter. I am writing this letter as one who has been among the Orthodox rabbinic leaders in the New World for over 51 years. And he goes on to describe who he studied with in Europe. And he says, but my Rebbeim always told me, Kol derechecha dacheinu am, ways are ways of pleasantness. And he says, I would never attack fellow Jews in public. And he goes on, they have spoken evil against our sons and daughters, our people, our land. It is as if they have taken the case before non-Jewish courts. They have slandered our daughters before our enemies, some of whom are still covered with the blood of Jewish children. Many of these non-Jews were part of the conspiracy to idly stand by while our European brethren were slain. He goes on and on. And here I have to tell you, I hear the Rav's voice. In other words, here Rav Lezer and the Rav are saying exactly the same thing. This I don't have to quote anyone. These ears, these eyes. Satmar were demonstrating, it was the time, I believe it was Gias Banat or Gias B'nai Yeshiva, the issues that that brought down the government so many years later. This is the mid-50s I'm talking about. And nothing has changed. The government fell over this issue. So Satmar held a big demonstration in front of the Israel consul on Park Avenue in New York. And the New York Times the next day was a front page picture. So after class, remember, the Rav gave shir, you couldn't bother him, and shir, we sat there, you know, frozen, frightened, filled with awe, respect. And Rabbi Lichtenstein in that corner, who would save us whenever the Rav got frustrated, and the Avush Teit de Gemara, Nuvas is the Daf, and then we, you know, a bunch of dummies. Aaron never went in there. For 4 years I sat there. Once he was off by one omer. I remember the sugya was, and he said Kuf Aleph Amid Bet. It was Kuf Bet Omid Aleph in Pesachim, in Ave Pesachim. That was Reb Aaron. Ach, Reb Aaron. You have no idea who he was. So he sat there in that corner. So after class, you could, you know, the guys that the Rav knew he knew us. He knew me as Arnold. He knew I was sincere. He knew I did my best. And so he said, Rebbe, well, was trachten from the demonstrations? What do you think of the demonstrations? And the Rebbe, bring me a Rambam. He got excited. Like, bring me a Rambam. Chelek Aleph, Hilchot Teshuva. And a kid ran up to the, I think he went next door. He had to go up to the library. Went into Harry Fishel, got a Rambam, brought it in. Chelek Aleph. The Rebbe opened up. Perek Gimel Halacha Yir Aleph. Eile Shinglam Chelek Lolam Haba. And among the people, the Rebbe Chelek Lolam Haba, it's a Porish Minat Sibur. And you see the Rambam's definition of a Porish Minat Sibur, even if you're from, even if you do every mitzvah, but you don't rejoice with the Jews when they're happy and mourn when they mourn, Ein Lo Chelek Lolam Haba. And he says, these people that demonstrate against the state of Israel in front of Goyim, quote, the Goyish hands are still covered with the blood of the 6 million. It's exactly replace the silver. Okay? Interesting. So, long, long letter. And he knew how to be cynical. It is a shame that I did not observe such total dedication on the part of these Jews when I stood as the head of Vat Hatzalah. And you understand what he's saying. When it came to saving Jews and raising money and all that the Vat Hatzalah had to do and how they got them out of Shanghai, how they got them out of Kobe and got them to Shanghai, they got them out of Russia, got them to Kobe, Japan, and all the money that was needed and what went on to buy Jews out in packages that were sent with food and other necessities that could be sold on the black market, they weren't there. But to demonstrate against the state of Israel, they're there in large numbers, Bifnei Amvi Eda. A beautiful, powerful letter. Reb Lezer Silver. I'm sure that Reb David helped him assure his daughter. The English is perfect. The letter appeared in English. The letter appeared in many of the local Jewish newspapers. And then there was an Agudah convention. And at the Agudah convention, you'll see the source, you'll see everything, but there's Borchening. Who the heck is this Reb Lezer Silver? And you know, this is the sad part, and I make it clear here. He was the man who organized Agudah in America, the man who put it on the map, the man who ran the Var Hatzalah, involved in saving Reb Aaron Cutler and so many others. And by 10, 20 years later, he's persona non grata. And at the Aguda Convention, some of the youth, and the youth is always more extreme than the older people. This is the nature of life. I have Talmidim, I'm very close with them too today, who were Meir Kahana's bodyguards. 50, 60 years later, they're not so extreme anymore. I'm more extreme than they are, Baruch Hashem. All right, I had the luxury of life of always dealing with Shira Shirim, young people. So I could remain a youngster, but they're not so extreme anymore. But the youth, they wanted to spar Reb Lazer and throw him out of the Aguda. And here Reb Aaron Cutler gets up, and he opposes this request. That if Reb Aaron opposed, he carried the day. And I'm quoting Reb Aaron's speech as recorded in Hapades, translated into English. People will say that we have pierced our master. It's the Gemara in Gittin, right? But which Rabbi Suva do you want to dispose? Is it the erudite Suva, who is renowned for his Torah knowledge? Or is it the Rabbi Silva, who is an undisciplined party member? Or is it the Rabbi Silva, who is a master politician? After all, there are many different Silvers. That's Reb Aaron Cutler. And again, Reb Aaron hits the nail on the head here. And Rakefet says it best. My older sister is Ms. Aguda, my younger sister is Mizrahi. Over the years, it may very well be that after he saw the opposition to Israel, Natura Kata, could very well be his older sister became Mizrahi and his younger sister was the Aguda. But this is the tension, this is the reality, this is what's happening. And here I'll go one step further on this theme. One of the saddest stories on the Israeli scene is the story of Pole Agudat Yisrael. Pole Agudat Yisrael is exactly what's happened to the Mizrahi element called the Chardalim, Charedim Datiyim Leumiyim. My brother, his family, has one branch of his family, all Chardalim. The breakaway from Merkaz Harav, Hamor. Know what I'm talking about? That all began because Merkaz Harav allowed a teacher's degree. What? You're interfering with yeshiva, allowing a teacher's degree? Apikorsis. Hezda? Yeshiva does anything but learn Torah? Apikorsis. Hamar, you just learn. Then you want to do army, you do army. But it's no different on that level than Ponovich, than Hebron. All right, I have many nephews who went there. Some are in learning, some are big. They all do army ultimately, but they're very serious kids. My brother's daughter has 13 children, so you can imagine how many are going to come out of that family. Either they're big in learning or they're big in the army. There's no playing around there. But it's a different concept. Chadalim. Charedim datiyim lumiyim. All right, I have some chadali in me. I'm more, multifaceted. But I understand them very well. And Poli Aguda people were like the Chadalim of today. They were pro-Israel 1,000%. On the other hand, they had beards and payas. Most Mizrahi people were like Rakefet, clean-shaven. We're a different generation. Today, that's not so. Chadalim, most of them have beards and payas, right or wrong. And they needed an organization someplace in the middle. They built Chafetz Chaim. They built Shalavim. A lot of Yekes B'Makor were part of this movement because it was Torim Derech Eretz, what Rav Hirsch began. This was now in a Israeli Levush. And then what happened was, there was a problem with Ben-Gurion, a whole story, you can research it, much has been written on it, and against the will of the Gera Rebbe, 1960, the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, we're pulling out of the government, no one has a right to cooperate with a secular Zionist government. Poli Aguda remained in. The leader of Poli Aguda was a Hasidic Yid from Poland, Binyamin Mintz, M-I-N-T-Z, make believe you know the name, ignorance should pass for the wise. Reb Binyamin Mintz, if you don't know, look him up, a lot has been written about him. The Gerer Rebbe refused to see him afterwards. He dropped dead of a heart attack. His Rebbe rebuked him. Ad Kedei Kach was the tension. Well, Poli Aguda got organized in America. 1964, this is after Poli Aguda in Israel is putting Chayrim down, Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah calls them a bunch of Mizrachistim in disguise. The Gera Rebbe refused to see Rabbi Binyamin Mintz. You know what I'm talking? He was the minister of the Doha, minister of communications. Do you know what the Israeli post office on Rehov Yafo was like when I came in Aliyah? When you went in the back of the post office, you always wondered why it took 2 weeks for a letter to go from one block to the next block in Jerusalem. It's very simple. I went in, I saw. It said, Gerish Dibble. They're sorting out the mail, singing a Hasidic niggin. 999999999. One letter. 999999999. A second letter. It was all Gera employed there. Binyamin Mintz, a Gera Chassid. I'm telling it as it was. He dropped dead. Now in America, Poli Aguda. And who attends and speaks? Reb Lazer Silva. And you know what happened? I'll give you a tshupa for honoring me with your presence today. I'll tell you a story about Baruch Lichtenstein. I'll tell you the story. They were talking about a summer camp for the kids and they should learn. And Reb Aaron says, and we're going to give them a tshupa. I don't know what that word is. It might be an Arabic word for a special gift. So everyone perked up. What did the bar mean? We're going to give out lollipops, candy bars. We'll give them a shir in Tanakh as well. A special gift, the shir in Tanakh. See, this is Reb Aaron. That the hymn, Reb Aaron. So, at this Poli Aguda meeting, who did they elect president? Nuhu Thiers from Kew Gardens Hills. Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld. The man who built Kew Gardens Hills. Also, a stamp from Gerich Sidon. You follow? So, some Kanoi got up and shouted out, how can we elect Fabian Schoenfeld? Wertgehet azan nomen, whoever heard of such a name? Fabian, a goyishen nomen, and else I'd sign Wunzer president, and he should be our president. And Reb Lazer Silva got up and thundered, Amoritz, Abikoyris. Who was the Gresgev and the Gresta Talmud from Rabbeinu Tam? We spoke about Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Peter, Peter, Edgar Cantation Peter, un Fabian Nicht, Amoritz Food, Macha Schweig. Oh, that was a famous moment. New York was shaking. That was Reb Lazer Silva. Charlie, we're not finished yet. I have one more step to go before I shift gears and change to a whole new world. Rabbinical Council of America. And that step, which we'll take next week, is exactly what will be part of Sunday Shir in a different context. The pressures of the Western world upon the Torah Jews, the rabbinate. Not simple to be a rabbi in Germany in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and not simple to be a Rav in the United States in the post-World War II era. Not simple to be a Rav today in Israel, where a third of the population are fabulous Israelis, speak a beautiful Hebrew, serve in the army, read only Hebrew, and don't know one word about Yiddishkeit. They never studied a Pasuk Chumash in their lives. They study Bible like we study Greek and Latin literature, if they study Bible. It's already been removed as one of the exams in high school. We'll see next week. It's going to open a world for you. And never Reb Lazer gets caught in it. And it also shows us what America was all about. So to reiterate on this downcast Monday morning, with Yomo tells me with Wednesday night there's a Machlekes HaPoskim. According to the American system, there will not be snow in Jerusalem, but the Europeans claim there will be snow. So we'll see. Machlekes HaPoskim. We'll see how it will turn out. As Sam Dershowitz already told me this morning, if it's snowing, I'm not going to shul. Believe me, we have a problem. Because if you know, I live in Rav Berlin. There are no shuls in Rav Berlin. Almost only from Jews, but no shuls. The shuls are one mountain up, Chalap, the next street. You got to climb about 7 flights of stairs, if you know what I'm talking about. New to climb those steps when there's ice on the ground, that's mamish sakonet nefasha. So I told Sam, let's wait and see. Let's hope the Americans are right, not the Europeans. So we continued with Agudas Rabbanan, Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Rabbi Blazer Silva, the swing to the right. We illustrated it. This is what happened. This was real. This was tangible. I don't think anything says it better than Rabbi Aaron's funeral. And until today, people do research. I've been interviewed many, many times about what happened at the funeral. And no, I was a kid. I didn't really know the inner workings. All right, it was a Rosh Hashiva already. It was my first year as a Rebbe, right, 62. But I didn't really know the inner workings at all. But I remember very vividly, it is said that the Rev came to the funeral with notes in his jacket pocket, thinking he would be asked to be maspid, and instead they asked the Satmaruv. And I have to say, I had an Erev HaPashut in my mind. People ask me, I've said the Satmaruv was maspid him in the Calvarilla synagogue, not at the airport. At the airport, before the body was loaded on the Pan-American plane, Reb Lazer Silva was maspid Reb Aaron. I thought the Satmaruv spoke then. No, the Satmaruv spoke at the funeral in the Calvarilla synagogue. And Reb Lazer spoke at the airport. And that was the story, and it carries through with Satmar, it carries through with the youth and Aguda want to kick out Reb Lazer Silva. Reb Aaron had more seichel than the youth, and he's right. Which Reb Lazer are you kicking out? And it carries through with the Poli Aguda and the classic story of Rabbeinu Petter. Remember what Rabbeinu Petter said, that if he was at, I believe he was a Kohen, and he said, if I could have been at Rabbeinu Tam's funeral, I would have been metame myself to Rabbeinu Tam. Kivrei tzadikim einu metamim. It's a very famous statement quoted here in relation to going to Batei Kfarot of soldiers, etc., etc. And Rabbeinu Petter was Rabbeinu Petter. Peter, what are we talking about? And Fabian, all right, Fabian is an English name. He was an English gentleman. His formative years were in England. You have to know where he's coming from. And Gerach Hassid. And if you know Fabian's family, he had 4 children, and Lottie died young of cancer. His wife, Ruth, the Chrona Levracha, she was married to a Chassidish Yid, to Leifa. I think it was a Chassidic Rebbe's son, if my memory is correct. They had 4 children, and he was a businessman. And one Saturday night, a plane left in the winter. Anyone remember this? A plane went to South America where they were doing import-export, and the plane went down in the Atlantic Ocean, the New York Channel. It took a while until bodies were recovered, till she could get a heter to remarried, and they made a shidduch between her and Rabbi Fabian, a beautiful shidduch, and they were a little older, they had twins together, so they raised 10 children, 4 and 4. Two of them were named Debbie. I had two students, supposedly sisters, with the same name. And Schindelheim was the other name. That's interesting. Leifer might have been her maiden name. I'm confusing, but Schindelheim was the other name. And then they had twins together, a boy and a girl. I taught the girl. I didn't teach the boy. Can I even tell where the boy is today? The boy is in Switzerland, the total Gerer Chassid, with the Langebot and the Begadim and everything that goes with being a Gerer Chassid. And like we spoke about Dr. Friedman, they found their roots. They went back to where they came from. And I've seen this time and again. You'll take the holes of family. How many of you know Manny Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the Rav's right hand in New York, and his wife should be living be well? Wonderful, wonderful people. So they had 4 children. Children had many grandchildren. Malk and I are walking along in Yerushalayim a week ago on Rehov King George. And a Hasidish younger man is yelling at us, "Hi, hi," comes over. "How are the Rakefets?" We're looking at him. Avremi Holzer, it's Manny's grandson. And there's a typical, it's David's son, one of the children, one of the 9 children. There's a beautiful example of a kid who always heard about the roots of Slonim and his grandfather who built one of the Slonim buildings in Slonim, a yeshiva, Moshe Dykman, his grandmother's father, and Slonim and Slonim and Slonim, and he went back to his Slonim roots. He lives in a Slonim, a little yeshiv where the, half of them are Slonimers, and dresses like a Slonimer and acts like a Slonimer and goes to a tish like a Slonimer and eats shirayim like a Slonimer. And hard to believe that generations lived in America, conquered America, conquered YU, conquered the great Western world, going back to their roots.
I
grew up in Miami Beach 100% against the, and let me tell you about growing up in Miami Beach. He went, David Rakefet was very upset because they should have remained here, and he was, it's a whole story, but he went to the Slonim Rebbe, the Netivat Shalom, and he told the Rebbe, his brother-in-law, Rabbi Zweig, his wife's brother, lives in Miami, has a yeshiva, and his wife is dreaming about Miami, and they're living here in Yerushalayim, but she wants to go back, and what should they do? And the Slonim Rebbe said to them, better to live in Miami and dream about Yerushalayim than to live in Yerushalayim and dream in Miami. And that's how they wound up back in Miami. My dear students, a few freebies. I haven't gone through everything I got today. This is about the Aruch HaShulchan, and it's from the Sfarim blog. And the problem we have, how much of the real Aruch HaShulchan do we have? What is missing? Where is it? Because there's certain parts, I mentioned it yesterday, on Geirut, for instance, we don't have that. It seems he left that not to get in trouble with the Tsarist government. Did he write about it? And what additions do we have? It's a very interesting question. This is what they were talking about in Miami Beach, that there's a TV program there or whatever, a Miami Theater Center. It's called Mic Drop. Women who talk in public about their lives, what motivates them, their problems. And this was an event where 5 local Chabadnikiyot Rebbetzins spoke about their life. There was opposition, it's not sneers, you know, the usual story. Here you can judge yourself. There were all types of pictures of the women, of the moderator. He is a man, these are women. It's something that has caught on in Miami Beach. It's ongoing. Israel awards Patriots Owner Kraft the Jewish Nobel. This is a prize given. I've never gotten a prize like this, $1 million. I think I've done more for Yiddishkeit and Israel than Kraft, but you got to have money. It's like I spoke with Richard Joe, give Rabbi Arnold Run a doctorate, an honorary. The man built Katamon. I can testify what Katamon was 50 years ago and what it is today, and it's the Shtiblach that did it. And I can give you the whole history with the Bentheims coming, their home, the mikveh, the renovation, and the Shtiblach. And I got a very simple answer. For $10 million and building a Churban Yerushalayim, you get an honorary doctorate, but underline the $10 million. So what I want to tell you about Robert Kraft, he's a good Jew. I don't know how from he is. He was raised the Talmud of the Rav. His father was a big chassid of the Rav. He went to Maimonides, and it's very nice what they're doing. This is he went to Maimonides. His father was a big supporter. Father, there was no Maimonides. Father was much older. Father was in order to have gone to Maimonides, you have to be at least my age. His father, if he would have liked to, would be over 100. So it doesn't work. New York Times, very, very interesting article on it's anti-Trump. In other words, they'll dig up anything they can against Trump, but including, I heard yesterday, accusing him of working for Russia. I mean, it's beyond comprehension. The biggest capitalist in the world is suddenly working for the communist Empire. All right, could be. Here, it's a woman. If you don't allow a woman to do abortion, if she's not the boss over her own body, this article gives you cases where they arrested women, for instance, for aborting a child, for not taking care of the baby in her womb. It's beyond comprehension what it's all about. By the way, halakhically, a lot of this is nonsense, because if there's danger to a woman, we do allow abortion. It's open and shut. Okay, very sad. Iceland is so anti-Israel, it's beyond comprehension. An article that the European rabbis are not welcome in Iceland. And if they had their way now, they want to outlaw Mila and they want to outlaw Shrita. Shrita only with stunning, like in Belgium. And all I can tell you is Tirat Zvi is going to be the wealthiest kibbutz in the world. If Kainimism ever worked anywhere, it worked in Tirat Zvi. Have any idea? Their Vusht factory. You don't know Tirat Zvi products? All over New York, all over Moscow, all over London, there's Tirat Zvi. In Belgium, they'll take over the whole meat industry. It will be from one kibbutz tati with Hashkacha from Tirat Zvi. I remember when they began, I remember complaining. I called my friends there from Bnei Akiva, how do you have a Pesach produce where you paste on a label? Anyone can take the label off, change the label, put the label. They said, you're absolutely right. The next year, everything was done by laser. By laser. Am I right? That's what they do. It's amazing. Here's a very interesting article that it's unbelievable. It seems the Yankees going to London, they're not the first ones. The Knicks are going to London now to play basketball and make some good money. And Enes Kanter, one of their stars, can't go because he's afraid that the Turks, he's an outspoken critic, he's afraid they'll kill him in London. So he's staying like the Iranians do, like the Russians did in London. And finally, here's the picture of the day. This is Rav Arla, one of the Satmar Rebbeim. He is in Palm Springs in California. It's Gan Eden there. And he's davening at the Chabad Shul. And at the new shul now that they built, he's putting the mezuzah up. Rabbi Yoelish must be turning over in his grave. Until we meet again in health and happiness, thank you so much for coming. Das Vedanya.